There's a fifth dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pits of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is the dimension of imagination in an area which we call Elder Dragon Journey.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're live back at the Elder Dragon Journey podcast. This is your host, Igor, and as always, it means my co-host, Niksha. Say hi, Niksha.
Hi, Niksha. Damn it.
So, what up, Niksha?
Oh, nothing. Just rushed from work back here to record an episode.
And this is kind of a special episode, isn't it?
It is. It's a bit delayed, but what can you do?
Life was a bit rough. But so, why is this a special episode?
Well, it was supposed to be made or uploaded or whatever on Pi Day, because Pi Day is our anniversary, and right now it's our third year in a row, right?
We've managed to survive for like 3 years and not get to episode 100.
Now that's an it.
Yeah, we're bad at this game.
Well, but we're close.
We've actually been keeping up our schedule properly now that we have a site to upload properly. I'm looking at the show notes from the episode 1, by the way. Wow.
Show notes.
our commanders of the week were Sidris the Traitor King and Sig the River Cutthroat.
Oh, okay, but Sig hasn't really changed that much.
Yep, mine thing has.
My god, now that's old.
Arlen Cord was the new thing, by the way.
The new hotness.
Mm-hmm. Also, Conspiracy 2 and Goblin Warchief was gonna be printed as an FNM promo. Sheesh, how things have changed.
No more conspiracies, but modern...
Yeah. Who knows what that's gonna bring?
Well, it's gonna bring 200-ish cards.
And most of them are most likely gonna be bad for modern nothing, you know, it's gonna break it just like, eh?
And then, you know, since they stopped doing reprint sets for modern, those cards aren't going to be reprinted.
Huh.
Kinda makes you think. Because every Modern Horizons won't have cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, food for thought.
But anywho, Niksha, what has been your commander of the week?
Well, I finally got to play a tournament with Captain Sisse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a decent commander and a decent deck. I really can't say much more other than I won one round. I got knocked out the last in another round, and in the third round I was just killed with alongside with everyone else.
Somebody comboed off.
Yeah, and I couldn't. And I was actually pretty good at preventing it, but he got rid of my preventers, and everybody blamed me because I had Thalia.
I mean, you were just trying to save the board.
Yeah, and they were like, yeah, we could have countered if we had one more mana. Like, why did you tap out then? I mean, we lost to, what's her face? Silvala.
Which one?
The green-white one.
Aha, the evil one.
Yeah, I mean, a ballista for a lot kind of ruined the mood.
Yeah, she does that.
But as usual, during the tournament, I didn't run into Mate, but after that we did a couple of casual games. Most of them were based around throwing insults at my general direction, and me driving Mate mad.
How did you drive him mad?
You know, by existing.
I mean, you usually do that, but something specific, or...?
Well, he really hates Winter Orb, apparently.
Winter Orb and a Trinisphere?
No, this deck was kind of Trinisphere-proof. He brought a Trinisphere-proof deck, just so he doesn't get blown out by Trinisphere, and then, you know, Winter Orb kind of his day.
I do have a Winter Orb story, by the way.
So, I tried to cast Sun Titan, and then he Pact of Negationed it, and then I was like, wow, you're going to Pact of Negation my Titan, instead of the Procious player, you know, next card he's going to play because he's going to kill us. And I was like, okay, regrowth on my Winter Orb, and then I play Winter Orb, and then he died.
Mate usually tends to die to taxing effects, I think.
He also hates both of my Thalias.
Gee, wonder why.
But yeah, in that one game, I managed to win. It was a slow and steady game, you know, fetch your Elesh Norn so you don't get comboed off or just overrun. Go get your Hokori so nobody untaps anymore. Orb of Dreams is a fun card as well.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't discriminate. Everything comes into play tapped, including enchantment, including planeswalkers.
What the hell happened to you, Nyxia?
We'll talk about that later, but enough of my commander of the week. Do tell, Igor, what is yours?
I went to Andres to play with my girlfriend. We played many decks. And one game I played with Alesha, I put Winter Orb, like, turn 2. Tess was playing Dinosaurs. Turns out it didn't actually matter. She just trampled all over us. Mm-hmm. I was super sad, because I had Winter Orb out. But I decided to make one silly change in Alesha just because I wanted to do some changes. I removed the Necropotence for the time being to put a Null Profusion in.
Mm-hmm.
Is that objectively worst decision? Yes, it is, but I freaking love Null Profusion. Plus, whenever I manage to play Null Profusion, I draw like 5-6 cards a turn.
Yeah, Null Profusion is cool and Recycle is cooler because it has a better art.
Yes, but I can't play that in Alesha now, can I?
No.
Sadly.
But you can play both in Blood Pod.
I can, but I have to get Recycled then.
Oh well.
But yeah, I had fun doing that, and you managed to pick up some cards for me on the tournament.
Yeah, some really fun cards.
Like says the person playing Winter Orb.
Armageddon. And I mean, realistically, Winter Orb really speeds up the game, because there's no more, you know, dirtling around on your turn. You just untap one land and pass the turn. That's it.
I mean, same. In that case, Armageddon speeds that process even more. You just draw a card and pass the turn.
Yeah, but when I have Winter Orb in play, then I actually win. If I have Armageddon resolved, I don't win after.
Well, maybe you should be the one resolving Armageddon.
Unless I have Smothering Tide in play, then you actually win.
I need to get a couple of copies of that card. But yeah, Armageddon, Arcane Denial, Zur's Wyrdling, because I'm a weird person like that, and I need more Soul Rings. Mm-hmm. I have put all the Soul Rings I had into all the decks I have, and that's like 8-9 decks. So I didn't think I was going to reach the point where I, you know, didn't have enough Soul Rings. 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, yeah, 10 decks. And I have just 9 Soul Rings.
You know, a long time ago, saying I have only 9 Soul Rings would be like, well, what are you talking about? Like, Soul Rings are like $10 a card.
Oh no, they were, when they were the lowest, I think they were like 15, 20 bucks. But luckily, then the Commander 2012 came in.
Yeah, then the Commander Nation attacked.
Yep. I mean, the Commander was always the ones driving the slowing prices, because there's only one other format where that thing is legal. Yep, and that's restricted. So, you know, I mean, here's also restricted, but...
I mean, it's a card that when you're playing a Vintage Cube with power in it, it's actually a better pick than Black Lotus.
Yeah,
most of the time.
Unless you're a real fast combo deck, yeah.
Unless you're a Storm, then yeah, sure, Black Lotus is better.
I mean, a Storm, you something with Monastery Mentor and things like that. There's gradients, but generally, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, what are our topics for the week?
So we got the Challenger decks just today.
So what are Challenger decks?
Well, they used to be really cool decks that helped people get into Standard. And the last Challenger decks were very successful. They were actually sold out quite quickly. And this year, well, they're kind of not as good.
They're not.
No, this year they're like...
Nah, why bother?
Anyway.
So why are they so meh?
Well, the main problem is that two of them are aggro decks, and aggro decks are, well, this time around, they're... Aggro decks are kind of... Because, you know, before you needed four... Heart of Kirin's, which were expensive, and they put four Heart of Kirin's in a deck, just like that. They also put some other really high-value rares, and this time, well, like I said, the aggro decks aren't that...
Because it's mono-white and mono-red, so, you know...
So in Mono White, there's like two History of Benalia worth talking.
Those are pricey, aren't they?
They are pricey, but you know, two of them in a deck, it's gonna kind of affect the price now. But you can easily, I mean, you can make the deck without them, but it's not really an optimal deck then.
Yeah, and the rest of the deck is basically one drops, right?
One drops, a two drop, nice.
And a three drop,
and a Benelish Marshal, yeah.
Yeah, everything else super cheap.
Yeah, nothing really spectacular. It's a pretty standard. It's called United Assault, and the white weenie with some lifelink effects to your Ajani Pride Mate, and pay even more life for Adanto Vanguard to never die.
Mm-hmm.
And you just finish off with a big Pride Mate with Knights from his Benalia.
I mean, if you're gonna upgrade this deck a bit, I guess you put one or two Lyras in the sideboard for longer games. Maybe?
On 21 lands, no. That's not really a... But that's not really...
Ah, be I said for longer games.
Even for longer games, your heart... It's not gonna be easy to get to that kind
of... Okay,
still,
then. We have Mono...
You need two more History of Benalia in that.
Mono Red is really club
Mono Red
standard.
Is just Mono Red.
You have four Whirlers, you have Pyromancers, Steamkins, Firebrands. Easy.
Chain Whirler were like once a chase rare and not now... Well, it's rotating out, so who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rekindling Phoenix is also a rotating card, and they really could have used, you know, two instead of one.
I mean, remove, like, a Banefire, put another Experimental Frenzy, I guess.
You know, they could have went with the mid-range Monored build.
They could have, but I guess they want to have more aggro decks. Speaking of Monored, just a side note, you know what's funny about Arena and Monored? There's apparently, when you're playing best of one, usually the shuffler gives you two hands and it gives you one that has more lands in it, right?
Yeah.
And people are building 13 land mono red decks.
Yeah, to abuse the shuffler.
Mm-hmm. That's the best thing ever.
And it's like, you get flooded with 13 lands. Wow.
This is why we can't have nice things, people.
That's why we can't have digital things.
But yeah. Also, I'm sad that Experimental Fantasy didn't prove good in both Alesha or Bloodpod. Turns out, in both of those decks, I draw a bunch of cards. That's why I put the Null Profusion. Next deck is what?
Next deck is an actual mid-range deck. Black-green. The Deadly Discovery. And it's that Explorer deck, which I don't think is that relevant.
It's played a bunch, but not exactly with this setup. Like, Fine Brokers aren't being played, Dixter Guides aren't being played.
Yeah, this
Squires...
is an older build.
Yeah.
This is definitely all old. And I'm surprised there's no Raska's Contempt. I mean, it's also a rotating card.
Yeah, that's a card that's actually featured prominently in those decks.
These kind of decks were like a prime place for rotating cards for their last hurrah, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, instead of, like, at least two of Raska's Contempt, they put in four Kaz Downs, and they do not serve the same purpose.
Yep.
Like, they put in three Ravenous Chupacabra. You need the Raska's Contempt to deal with Teferis, which, by the way, there are none.
Teferis and things like Lyra and stuff.
They really could have put one control deck, and, you know, put in a... One Teferi and one Lyra, that's completely enough. That's plenty.
Something white-blue or Esper?
White-blue.
At least we have Arcane Tempo, which is...
I mean, they did put one Shockland in the mid-range one.
Yep.
But that's it.
Imagine if they just made... they printed instead of Arcane Tempo the mono-blue deck.
That's a bit too much, then.
Screw it. The whole aggro team, let's go with it.
That deck is super cheap as well.
Yep, that's a point. Might as well.
So in Arcane Tempo, they put in a grand total of one Arclight Phoenix.
Which is gonna pay for your whole deck, I think.
Yeah, and three Sulphur Falls, which are also pricey.
That's nice, actually.
But then again, we got, like, Mirari Conjecture, which is like, whatever, okay.
You also have Nimizzets.
Two.
So you can actually take one of them and go play Vintage.
Yeah.
Because once you resolve that thing, either by outing it or actually casting it, you're kind of winning the game.
Wow.
I mean, what is your opponent going to do? Unless they're on something like, you know, shops or something that doesn't cast that many instants of sorceries, or at all, your regular blue base deck is just gonna fold.
So this Arcane Temple is basically, is it Drakes, but it has only 4 Drakes in it.
Yeah, on the other hand, the Drakes themselves aren't that costly to buy.
You know, they could have put in a 1,000-year storm instead of the Mirari Conjecture.
Oh, that would have been epic. I would love that.
Since, you know, just one Arclight Phoenix, I mean, come on.
At least you get 4 Lava Coils.
They could have waited with Arclight Phoenix until next year and then put a deck with 4 of them. Just to laugh at people.
Or, you know, put the 2 Moomer Mystics in the sideboard and put 1,000-year Elixirs. Or 1.
I mean, the decks are meant to be upgradable, but still competitive out of the box. I think they managed to do it. I just don't think that the selection is that good.
What would you put? What would be your 4 decks in the Gauntlet?
I guess I would put in... I wouldn't put in mono-red and mono-white. I would put in that red-white variant. That's basically mono-white with red splashed in.
Mm-hmm.
This... Golgari, it's decent. I would put in blue-white control. I guess I would put in Is It Drakes because it's a good deck. It's a competitive deck.
It's a tempo deck.
And it exists for quite a bit now.
I mean, I wouldn't mind having the mono red in the Gauntlet, and then the rest of the Gauntlet would be basically the same in my mind.
And you know, the mono red is actually fine, except I would go with... Like, the build that is aggressive game 1, but can go long games post-sideboard.
I guess that's the part that you upgrade for the deck.
Yeah, but you have to upgrade, like, a lot.
Mm-hmm. Like with Rekindling Phoenixes and stuff.
Yep.
I'm glad that deck exists because Experimental Frenzy is being featured prominently in it. Because it's kind of difficult to lose games with it once you have a Frenzy online. Unless you brick with the Frenzy, of course.
Yeah. Unless you draw another friend, they were like, okay,
yeah,
okay, deck, fine.
See, this is the deck that wants a Brainstorm effect really, really badly. I'll cast this at the top of my library to, you know, draw 3 and put 2 best cards from my hand on the top of my library. Maybe they'll print Brainstorm in Modern Horizons.
Oh, they're not going to do that, no way.
Really, Nixia, why would that happen? Such a fair and innocent card.
I mean, what if the London Mulligan goes? Then Brainstorm is completely fine because you already won without it.
The best thing about London Mulligan is the Serum Powder.
Oh yeah, there's going to be so much cheap.
No.
So, those are the Challenger decks. They're okay.
They're here.
I expected more, but... You know, at least one... come on, when are they going to Teferi? And Teferi is such a key card for every format in Magic right now.
Basically, yeah.
And it's rotating out, so what's the hot...
Maybe they'll print one in Commander 19. Definitely. Anywho, moving on. So, what's next?
So you were telling me something about what happened to me.
Yeah.
And it's time we had the talk.
About birds and bees, or?
If by birds and bees you mean orbs and spheres, then yeah.
Basically, yes. Because you get shafted either way.
So, when a control player and a stacks player love each other very much... I'm kidding. Okay, so, over the course of the past 3 years, I would say for me, I changed quite a bit as a Magic player.
No.
I mean, I just got more access to more toys, so...
Basically?
It was a natural progression. So we can look back to how we used to play, how we play now, and how we see ourselves playing in... Do a little retrospective, it was third year.
I mean, you changed a lot, wanna start?
Well, I changed a lot from the guy that despised blue. That was before 3 years. Before mm-hmm. the... So, more than 3 years ago, and when I played Damia, I thought that was my absolute deck I'm going to play forever and ever. That changed. Then came the Atraxa. I remember the Atraxa deck. It was a Super Friends build.
Oh yeah, I remember it. It took a long while.
It took a long while, but eventually I disliked the deck because it just... I mean, I had like 5-minute turns on by the end of them, I did. So I didn't like, and I didn't like tutors. Tutors are like, ugh. I mean, instead of a tutor, you can be playing a card.
What is the deck you're currently running? Was it maybe, you know, Captain Sisay?
Yeah. Well, the difference between other decks and Captain Sisay is that you don't actually need to put any tutors in the...
You already have one.
Your commander is a tutor. Very efficient. Oh, yeah, and I learned, just by sheer coincidence, I was like, I was reading that bandit hideout land.
Uh-huh, yeah.
The one that you pay 3 life for a creature.
Yeah. The Hall of the Bandit Lord.
Yeah. That land actually says it gains haste.
Yes.
It doesn't end at end of turn.
Yep.
So you can play your CSA, pass the turn, and people are like, they're going to be quiet because, like, you missed it. And then at the end of a player's turn, you say, okay, I tutor. It's like, what? And then they'll read the card. And it was like, whoa.
Also, you know what's good about that land if you have a Spanish version?
What?
It's called Salón del Señor de los Banditos. I'm not even kidding, that's the name of it.
Yeah, that's also for Lord of Atlantis. He's called Señor de Atlantido. And yeah, I'm actually playing a deck that can either be explosive and win once Sisay taps, or I can go grind a bit longer game by putting in Hokoris, Winter Orbs, things like that, you know, Thalias. Thalias are actually really, really impactful.
And apparently hated.
Yes. I learned the value of such cards because playing in a more competitive environment, I learned that, you know, things that were completely useless in our casual games were actually some of the best cards there are against, you know, more competitive decks. So I just generally switched from a player that just liked to play long games, like 1 to 2 hour games, I had no problem with them, to a player that just realized that, you know, games are fun, but at some point they do have to end.
Mm-hmm. I think that one thing that changed about that for both of us, we became really busy with work life and all that, and you don't actually have the time to spend 3 hours on one game.
I mean, I do, since, you know, I go to our local game shop and then spend like 4 to 5 hours there.
Yeah, but don't you want to spend like that time playing a couple of games, not just one?
Yes, I do. And also my tendency with playing more and more modern, you know, kind of got in the way as well. Because modern to me, modern is still fun. Sure, there are the occasional Infect decks that I still despise. Why are you playing Infect? It's 2019, get on with the program.
Play Phoenix, for God's sake.
Actually, Mono Blue Tron has a good matchup against Phoenix Eye. It's not the Phoenixes that are the problem. It's the Thing in the Ice. Thing in the Ice is actually the strongest card in that deck, fight me. Because it dodges so much. I should be playing Warping Whales in... Yeah.
Definitely. Oh god.
Definitely. Okay. And I noticed that playing Mono Blue Tron made me better against, well, everything, while making a lot worse against mid-range. Like, a whole lot worse against me. Like, it's not even a favorite matchup anymore.
Who plays mid-range in this time of the year?
With Modern Horizons, I think that mid-range will be on the rise.
Honestly, who knows? Because nobody knows who the hell is going to print anything.
Yeah. It's a wild world.
Wild West.
Also, I evolved as a player. I can't even say that I evolved. But from a player who's like, oh yeah, more story, woohoo, to a guy that cares about, well, three characters in the story, and that's Ugin, Karn, and whatever token green planeswalker they make.
Token green planeswalker.
I mean, they change them so often. I mean, what happened to Garuk?
To whom?
Where is he?
Who's that guy?
They kind of forgot about him, you know? 36 planeswalkers in one set, and Garuk doesn't, you know, come there and kill them all because he, you know, Apex Predator lives on just finding and killing planeswalkers. I mean, where else is he? But anyways, and I care about those three characters because, you know, for my Tron decks.
Yeah, that's basically
no other reason, really. And of course, Theobald. But Theobald is for the meme.
Theobald is for the lols when it comes to you. You're the guy who has the corner market, the market corner when it comes to Theobalds and Pixies.
You know, nothing would make me happier if they just reprinted this Theobald at Uncommon. Just reprint him at Uncommon.
Or reprint him as he is, but plus one is just draw a card at Mythic.
Or just reprint him at Mythic and Nexia, really angry.
Nexia, or even better, plus one, Fatal Looting.
Yeah, but it's random.
No. Reprint the card as this, but just change it that it's Fateless Looting. And change the name of the Planeswalker.
Fateless Looting.
Yes. Sure. Other abilities are just the same, but plus one is Fateless Looting.
He has like literally no other abilities, just one. Plus one Fateless Looting.
Honestly, I would play that Planeswalker.
I would honestly
play that guy.
But he starts at zero loyalty, so that's the catch.
No. Okay, starts with one. And sure. It's a plus two.
Plus one. Let's keep it fair.
Honestly, I'd be like, this is the Bane's Planeswalker ever. Why the hell not?
I mean, wait, what the hell? Started at 2 loyalty, plus 0 Fateless Looting.
Okay.
Okay, sure, playable.
I can do that. I would get that foiled for Alesha. Mm-hmm. Easy.
I used to love big, expensive cards, as in mana cost expensive, and now I just, you know, see an expensive card, and if it doesn't do a lot, if it doesn't like win me the game or protect me from losing the game, it's like not interested at all. I mean, I still love those cards, but you know, they have their place.
Mm-hmm. The place is KNT.
Of course.
Basically, that's the only place that you're gonna play it. I was going through the old files of the podcast. Apparently, back in 2016, I was still yelling Free Braids. But, you know, that's still going on strong. Free Braids. But sheesh, we changed a lot from the 3 years ago.
Remember when we discussed about the politics in Commander?
Yeah,
now we're like, somebody's doing politics? Okay, kill him.
No, I just go with one small tidbit when it comes to that. I don't negotiate with terrorists. Whenever Marco tried to do politics with us, I would just tell him, I didn't negotiate with terrorists, I'm gonna smack you now.
Yeah, I just learned that, you know, if somebody says that, okay, I'm going to sacrifice myself for the good of the collective, I was like, okay, I don't care. I really don't care. You can do it if you want to, but...
Not even that. I mean more of a, if you attack me, I'm gonna kill your thing. To which I'm like,
okay,
alright then.
I guess I'll just play Winter Orb so you can't kill my thing?
No, not even that. I guess I'll just spend your resource. You killed my thing, I'll just get it back next turn. Let's see how far we can do this.
Yep.
Of course, the problem with him is that he usually plays blue, so he can draw into more things. But, you know.
But yeah, we like stop dabbling in politics altogether.
Mm-hmm. I mean, why still apply teachings of Sun Tzu when it comes to playing Commander?
He was a wise man, and he obviously played Commander a lot.
Basically? I mean, I found some other quotes when it comes to that, but I'm gonna read that later. I changed also a lot when it comes to Commander because I used to play a lot of just graveyard decks, and that was it. And ever since I started tinkering with Death and Taxes Alesha, that kind of warped me. And now the only thing I have are just taxing decks upon a taxing deck upon a taxing deck, and I want more. Yeah, and you were the one who were like, wow, that's disgusting, and now I even managed to corrupt you.
Well, it was the collective.
I know.
Yeah, I changed from no taxes at all to playing one green-white taxes and one blue-red that, you know, Winter Orb, Blood Moon back to basics, Mana Vortex that kills lands, you know, why should you have lands? No, actually, it's because it's a spend point. So, you know, when you blow up your lands, blow up everyone's land, and then you put in big Eldrazi, you know... You don't want to play pay 6 mana for that. You want to pay 0 mana, Richard Garfield intended. Paying 0 mana for Emrakuls and Kozilek, now that's real magic.
Also apparently, randomly in episode 30, you were worried how strong is Aether Revolt gonna be.
Oh, I still hate the Aether Revolt. I still hate Kaladesh. I think the whole set was a mistake. It was a huge mistake. Just like Goblins versus Gnomes in Hearthstone was.
I wouldn't actually know how to approach that.
I mean, it just plain and simply was a mistake. I stand by it.
I'll trust you, I guess. But yeah, we've changed a lot. And I'm gonna go for, not even for the better, but I like this competitive, more competitive drive in our decks more than I like Dirtling.
Kind of. You can still competitively Dirtle, but you need to know your limits.
I mean, the best example of our games was when we were making fun of Mate a couple of weeks ago. Not because we were making fun of Mate, but because we were playing disgusting spells, but everybody's having so much fun.
Yeah, I mean, I just never thought that we could have fun playing
Trinispheres.
Trinisphere, Winter Orbs.
I couldn't believe that you weren't the saltiest person on the table.
I mean, just for the record, Mate, we still love you.
I mean, I know. And Mate is a beautiful and a great person, and we love that he's actually a listener. But the amount of salt that he was producing was wonderful. Beautiful.
I mean, it still doesn't rival my levels of salt when I get real salty, but...
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think that, well, anything really rivals it.
Yeah, but you rarely actually get to those levels of real salt. Mostly you're just making fun of it.
Yeah, no, but, you know, I'm salty on the... You just don't see my salt. I got better at controlling my salt. The salt is still there.
You've grown up, I guess. But yeah, I mean, even Tessa's decks have changed. Remember when she was playing a cute dragon tribal?
And now she's playing a cute food change tribal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything in the deck serves to fuel the bloody food chain.
Actually, at one point I was even thinking about going full-on competitive
Oh no.
But I'm afraid how that would turn.
I mean, what would you do with that?
Honestly.
And if you're playing 5-color, disgusting things, might as well go with Fuchin and Tazri.
Oh, no, I'm not playing 5-colors. My Reaper King is primarily 3-colors.
I know.
Everything green sucks.
Why?
Because there's nothing good for artifacts in.
Oh, that's a different thing.
There's Beck and Call, but you know, for the Beck part.
You can play that stupid thing from Ravnica Legions, that thing that destroys all the... Out of enchantments and gives the controllers 2/3 beasts for each one.
I mean, so I like killing my scarecrows because they're more useful dead.
That's my point.
Also, I remember a game where I put, you know what's disgusting? Reaper King with that equipment that makes copies of
Blade of Selves or?
No. The Dominaria one.
Ah, yes. The Helm of the Host.
Yeah, Helm of the Host. So it's so disgusting.
I mean, put Helm of the Host and the Blade of Selves on Reaper King.
I mean, you don't have to need the Blade of Selves. You just put in what's he called? That I forgot the name of that guy that copies himself and keeps his name.
Sakashima the Imposter.
Sakashima, yeah, Sakashima is also fun. I mean, my worst problem with Reaper King is that in casual games he gets too disgusting. And in competitive games, he just doesn't. He's too slow.
I still get scared of your Reaper King, just because I have memories of it. Basically, leaving you too much time, and then things happen.
And if I go in full competitive by shifting all my explosive rocks into it, then it might actually become a threat.
I mean...
As we all know, I hate playing. Not even in Joyra do I... I don't even play tutors in Joyra, and it... And the only tutor actually in Joyra is Eye of...
Eugene.
So that's our story about
mm-hmm.
our past, present, and future selves.
I mean, we'll see what comes in the future. I'm hoping we'll still keep on making podcasts, because actually this is one of the highlights of my week. I mean, just sit for like an hour or two and shoot the breeze and talk about Commander, that's really nice.
An occasional other...
Often other formats, but you know.
Often. Okay, yeah.
But we never said we were going to be exclusively talking just Commander.
Yeah, we're just Dirtling. I mean, I'm the guy that I'm the guy who made a almost competitive case, a viable case of playing a full playset of Nest Invaders in a Tron deck.
I mean, you always make do with those cards. You always make something crazy and suddenly it works.
I mean, it was just stupid. I mean, I played Tron just for the mana to place and equip swords in the same turn.
That, and then remember that time that you played stupid walls in Tron, because why wouldn't you?
I remember. I mean, I still have that base of the deck, and I'm going to switch to it if midrange becomes relevant. Mm-hmm. Because midrange can suck it.
Oh, look, I have a 0-4. What are you going to do about it?
Oh, they're going to, you're going to fatal push it, okay.
Oh no.
Sure.
Poor me.
Oh no. Here's a cause, like. Have fun.
Push that one if you can. And turns out, huge Eldritch Horrors cannot be just pushed off a skyscraper that easily.
But they can slip.
Yeah, if you push it from a really high, it does nothing, but if the monster slips, it dies sometimes.
And I actually had something else on this topic, but I can't remember, and it's probably for the best. Oh yeah, just the other day I watched another one of Kenobi's videos on YouTube.
Yeah?
Where people submitted their decks for him, like the most Kenobius deck ever.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them actually caught my eye, and I actually might try it out myself.
What's the deck?
Mono White Tron in text.
Oh, of course it is! Why wouldn't it be?
It's so silly. It's so silly, my deck.
What do you actually do with it?
Well, you attempt to go Texas early game and then transition into, you know, having a Tron land. So your second best creature in Magic, Eldrazi Displacer, can flicker Wisp like a whole bunch of times in the same turn.
So guys, remember when your Texan decks are supposed to be low to the ground and all that? Nah, screw that one. We play Commander in Modern now.
Just slip in a random Karn and maybe a Nulamog or a Nulamog and you're golden.
Look,
if a game goes long enough, you can actually violin an Eldrazi Titan.
It's basically, I wanted to play Commander, but the guys told me we're playing Modern tonight, so I, you know, scrape what I had by.
But yeah.
I started with Kostal out in the game. They were like, no, we're not playing Commander. I was like, oh, I guess I'll shuffle that in.
Like, there's a legit mono-white build for Tron, but why not go for...
for the memes. For the memes.
Okay, but we have one more topic, right?
Yeah, we do.
So, as always, our production quality is of the top notch, and we scrambled through random cards in Scryfall.
Oh god.
And we actually stumbled upon a card we forgot completely existed. And it wasn't really that, it's not really that old, it's actually quite recent. Like from around 5 months ago.
But put it into perspective, I forgot existed.
Yeah.
I usually know all the random cards. I was like, what the hell is this?
Except that, what's his face droid?
Oh yeah, he was like, what the hell?
Yeah, but that card is like 23 years old, so you can be excused for that one. So we stumbled upon this card called Goblin Goliath, and decided that let's not make it a single card discussion, let's make it a single product discussion, because it's a product we completely forgot. We probably talked about it, but we completely forgot about it. And now that we've become wiser, I guess we can talk about it more competitively.
Oh yeah, if there is one term I would connect with us, it's wise.
And competitive.
Definitely.
So the product in question is the Game Night product. If none of you actually remember it, I don't blame you, because I don't remember.
Nobody does. I don't think Wizards remember this.
I mean, so it's just 5 months ago, but still.
What the hell is that? So what the hell is it?
So Game Night was a weird product made with five precon decks for 2 to 5 players, playable right out of the box. For an MSRP of $40, which if you split among 5 people, it's actually, a decent rate. So, you can just, 5 of you just buy it and play a game of
not Emperor, the Star?
No, Prismatic is something else. It was so long since we played 5-player.
Just play free-for-all. Free-for-all.
5-player free-for-all, whatever.
Screw it.
And those decks were, mostly like jank cards. One-off, two-offs. There's actually 3 Militia Buglers in the white one, so that's a thing.
Each one is monocolored, by the way.
Yeah. And they each of them had one not legal for standard exclusive card just for that product. And upon reviewing them now, like thinking about our more competitive experience through four-player free-for-alls, they actually started looking a bit better now.
Some of them are not crap, is what he's trying to say.
Yeah. So I stumbled upon Goblin Goliath, which, well, we'll go over them. So it's a 6 mana, for so 4 and double red for a 5/4 Goblin Mutant. And when it enters the battlefield, you create a number of 1/1 red goblin creature tokens equal to the number of opponents you have. So for the sake of, you know, simplicity, we just say, well, you get 3 goblins. And for 4 mana, 3 and a red, and you tap it, if a source you control would deal damage to an opponent this turn, it deals double that damage instead. So in a Saskia deck, if your 4/4 thing passes, you say that you play 4 mana and now it deals 8 damage to one player and 16 damage to another player.
That is quite nice, actually.
That's actually, you know, kind of good. And it's a creature that can attack. So if you're playing Gratuitous Violence, you know, the problem with Gratuitous Violence is that it, you know, it can't attack. Really, it can't.
It wants to, but, you know.
And I think that Gratuitous Violence is for every player.
I think it's only for you.
Whatever. So it's a beat stick that makes chompers or, you know, potential beat sticks.
What you actually want to do with this guy is give him vigilance and then go smash people.
I mean, you can do that with reconnaissance.
Yeah. Also, Gratuitous Violence is only if a creature you control.
Yeah, this is if a source.
I should most likely get this for test play with for Saskia.
Yeah, it's actually quite a...
And some of the other ones are not total crap as well.
For instance, the green one.
Let's start from the top to bottom.
Oh, top to bottom. Okay, sure. Take it off.
So, Militant Angel for 3 and a white-white. It's a 3/4 Flying Lifelink Angel. Surprise, surprise. And when it enters the battlefield, create a number of 2/2 White Knight creature tokens with Vigilance equal to a number of opponents you attacked this turn.
Which translates to if you... It doesn't have to connect, so if you attack all three of them, it's a 5 mana 3/4 that makes 3 2/2s.
So basically that's 9 power for 5 mana.
Yep.
And seeing the deck it comes with, it's quite aggressive, so it's not that difficult to actually get to get two dudes.
And also, you know, getting 4 dudes for 5 mana is pretty decent.
Pretty decent. There's a certain hero from Mirrodin Besiege that does similar thing when it attacks. So, you know, this one is okay. Not something I would jump over about, but if I'm playing more white or something like that, why not? Blue one, we had some talk about this one before the show, right? Really what it does.
So it's Inspired Sphinx, 5 and double blue for a 5/5 Flying Sphinx. And when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card for each opponent. And for 4 mana, for 3 and a blue, and no tapping required, you get a 1/1 colorless Stopter with flying. So it's a mana sink.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, 7 mana 5/5 that draws 3 on enter the battlefield, the 7 mana part is really restrictive, but if you're playing like a rune, like a manifesting rune, or something like that, or even the kid walker, Aminato.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's 7 mana. It's odd. So you can play it in your odd deck.
I would play this only, I think, in Unesh. The Sphinx guy, right?
Sure.
Because this comes into play. You draw 3 cards and then you factor fiction.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a good deal, I think.
So if you have ways to flicker it and cheat it out, it's actually... I mean, flashing it in. Flashing it in is absolute value. So it's 2 mana instant speed for 2 mana draw 3 cards.
I mean, if we're using the card flash on this card...
I mean, in a pinch.
We're doing something wrong, but you know.
It's still pretty good. I mean, 2 mana to draw 3 cards, that's... And then you use, you know, Cedris to get it back, unearth it.
Speaking of cards. Cedris, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, this one is a bit potential. Iffy. It's a bit iffy in my mind. If you're gonna be paying a bunch of mana to draw 3 cards, why not play Arcanis?
He has to tap?
Yeah, but he's a wizard, and if you have some things that care about wizards, like, you know, Azami, You don't even have to tap it by its normal means to draw a card. Mm. And Arcanis is way cooler than the Sphinx.
Yeah, he doesn't even have a creature.
He does. It's a wizard. He had a Wizard Arcanis, a mighty good one.
Wizard is a creature type, okay.
Yeah, but that's the only thing it says, wizard. It could be like a couple of kobolds one atop another. It could be an ogre. You don't know.
It's probably a bunch of kobolds. Let's be real.
No, it's Dominaria. It's a bunch of Atogs.
Probably.
Then we have the black one, right?
The black one that's actually... interesting.
If you're dedicated enough, it's good.
So it's a 5 and double black for a 5/5 menace zombie that when it enters the battlefield, return up to X target zombie cards from your graveyard to the battlefield, where X is, well, the number of opponents you have. So a 7 mana 5/5 that on enters the battlefield, not cast, you get 3 zombies, and you're playing a zombie deck, so you can easily reanimate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even 7 mana, it's just a prime reanimation target.
What's the name of that reanimation effect? Victimize, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can victimize this guy to get 2 guys back from your graveyard, and then, you know, sacrifice this guy to get this guy back. Oh, goddamn it. I just want to get this guy back with victimize, is what I meant.
Yeah.
And then...
because you get 5, dude.
Well, you...
I mean, 7 mana is a lot, but, you know, mm-hmm. reanimation is a thing. Oh.
Also, look at the art. He looks like a much weaker Grave Titan, with the armor and everything.
Well, he is weaker than a Grave Titan.
No, and I don't mean that, because Grave Titan has corpses going out of Sarwit's bones.
Yeah. He looks like a giant.
And just that. Because this is way less scary than the guy with a huge sword who's, you know, crapping out zombies, literally.
I mean, this is just a, you know, a Hulk. He has a big axe, and that's about it.
He's not a Titan. And the last card we have is the Avatar of Growth for 4 and a green. It's a 4/4. The vanilla test, it's not passing it. 6 yeah. mana, 4/4. It has trample. And when it comes into play, each player searches their library for up to 2 basic cards, puts them onto the battlefield, and shuffles the library. But the kicker is, this spell costs 1 less to cast for each opponent you have. So it's basically a veteran explorer, but he doesn't have to die. And if you're playing something like our good friend Aeon Mind Sensor or Leonin Arbiter, guess what?
So
this one isn't bad.
It's a 4/4.
Basically.
And if you're going to use those 2 mana, because they enter untapped, and if you use those 2 mana for something useful, he becomes a 1 mana 4/4 trample.
Of course, the only problem is if your opponents can actually tutor those lands, then it's a bit iffier.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is that you go with a plan that you're going to abuse a lot of lands a lot more efficiently than your enemy. And if your playgroup is, like, competitive enough, they might not even have basic lands.
Hi, Mate.
No, he has enough. He learned his lesson.
He learned his lesson. He was crushed enough.
Also, I was super relieved to learn that Pelaka Worm actually has the M19 symbol, because then I would suddenly, like, be obliged to buy this shit.
Yeah, there was a Pelaka Worm in the Game Night set. But overall, these decks don't have that many good cards. There's Languish, that's a cool card.
Yeah.
Remember when that was the thing in Standard?
So, yeah, those are some actually legitimate Commander cards.
And there is the white one.
But then there is one.
Yeah.
Oh, poor white.
Speaking of random cards, I remember when Hydrolash was a thing in Standard. Holy crap, that was a long time.
When always watching.
Yep.
Okay, but we did go over the past, and this brings us to an end of yet another not 100th episode.
But we're getting closer to it. So this is episode 80... which one?
6?
6?
Let's go with 80.
Yeah, it is actually 86. Good job, you're actually doing your job properly, unlike some people here.
Yes.
Not guessing it at all.
Not my style.
But yeah, this was another lovely episode of the Elder Dragon Lord podcast. And as always, the Emperor protects.
He does.
Before, now, and in the future.